Welcome to We're Only Human, a podcast focused on blending research and practical advice to help today's HR, talent, and learning leaders improve business outcomes. Let's welcome your host, Ben Eubanks.
People underestimate how the vibes that you give off influence the people who may look up to you.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to We're Only Human. I'm Ben Eubanks, your host, and that is just a tiny snippet of the conversation gold you can expect today with my good friend, Christina Manyard. In today's conversation, we talked about millennials and how much of what you think you know about this generational group may not be what it seems. If you'd like the conversation and want to have someone actually talk about this kind of content at an event you're working on, we'd be glad to present the topic again. We've done it a couple times for a few groups, and they really enjoy the discussion, the back and forth, the dialogue. It's just a fun, funny, entertaining, and also informative session. Speaking, I've been on the road a lot lately and will be for the foreseeable future. Coming up is the Skillsoft and Sum Total event in Vegas. After that, I go to Silk Road to the user conference in San Antonio, and finally to the Human Capital Institute Strategic Talent Acquisition Conference in Miami. A lot of good stuff coming up. If you're at any of those events, I'd love to connect with real life. Be sure to hit me up on Twitter or on the website. Also, I'm actually closing in on the home stretch of the book that I've been writing for the last few months. Whew! The book is called Artificial Intelligence for HR, and the focus is on these new AI-based technologies that are now entering the HR space. You know, we're used to it in our personal lives, right? Netflix algorithms pick our next shows. Our phones give us a heads up to use our discount card at the grocery store. But what about the workplace? What problems are the tools solving, and how do they actually work? So I dig into all the good stuff, like how this impacts things like training, recruiting, and even areas like employee scheduling, all those details and more. My take on the topic really is that AI will allow HR to be more human, not less, if we take the right approach to blending our skills that we bring to the table with the strengths that machines can offer. It's been a long slog, and I probably need to just publish an episode talking about the process, what I've learned, what it's been like working with a publisher, things like that. I talk to a lot of HR leaders who think they'd like to write a book about some of their experiences, things like that, and I'd love to kind of share some of those insights with you, what it's been like, what I've learned, what I wish I had known starting out, those things. Anyway, if you're curious about the book that I've been working on, I'd love for you to check out the basic website I've set up, aihrbook.com. That's aihrbook.com. Really simple. If you want to take a peek at that, I'll be building that out over the next few months. I actually have a quick sign-up form there, so you can actually get in the loop on announcements and things with the book and special features, all that other good stuff if you're curious. Okay, now back to the reason you opened this podcast. Today, my goal and Christina's is to step on a few toes, gently, kindly, respectfully, especially if you've used the word millennials any time in the last 30 days. That said, we have fun, we laugh a lot, and we dig into some uncomfortable truths that we have to face as HR leaders. So let's muster up our courage and dive into today's show. Hello, everybody. Welcome to this episode of We're Only Human. Today, we welcome back my good friend and colleague, Christina Manyard, to the show. Welcome, Christina.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So I want to crown you. You are the only returning guest, and actually this is your third time to be on the show. We've talked about in the past recruiting, hiring manager relations, all those kind of fun things. And today we're going to talk about something a little bit different. One of the topics that you and I know and love. I can't even say that without laughing a little bit. But before we get into that, I want to, for those people that might not have heard you in the past, or even those that have heard about you, they know Christina's a SHRM volunteer. You're a recruiting expert, newly to be added to our resume soon, as we are, you and I are the co-hosts for the Disrupt HR in Huntsville, which I'm excited about.
It's going to be fun.
It's going to be awesome. But let's go for something new to help people get to know you even more. I want you to tell me, I'll go first so you don't feel completely like I'm putting you on the spot, what the last photo is on your phone. And mine, it can't be any more embarrassing than mine. So I pulled it up. The last photo I have is last night my son just got a new stuffed animal puppy, and he wanted me to carry it around in the baby carrier on the body wrap thing. So I'm wearing the baby carrier around my chest, and I've got this stuffed puppy, and he wanted me to take a picture to send it to Melanie to prove that I was taking care of his dog. So
yes. I'm going to need you to publish that photo with this. But I need you to. That is great. That's awesome. Guess what? Mine's not embarrassing at all.
Nah.
And it's not a selfie.
I don't believe it.
I know that's surprising. I actually just got back from a birthday lunch with one of my coworkers, and I took a picture of her with her cake and candles and her sombrero. We went to eat at Rosie's for her lunch. So it's a picture of my coworker celebrating her birthday.
Okay. That surprises me actually, because I don't think I've ever seen you point the phone at anyone else.
Okay. Turns out I can.
No, it's a skill. Okay, so let's move on. Today we're going to talk about millennials. Okay, the word even grates me a little bit to say it out loud, but you and I have presented on this in the past. We've done kind of a horror-themed Night of the Living Millennials, the scary stuff that businesses need to face, and we've talked about the topic a lot. And in the last week or two, I've had, I don't know if I've been super sensitive to it or what, but I've had so many things kind of cross my desk, cross my email, articles I've run across, just, here's the top five ways to deal with millennials, or here's, four things to know so that you can retain your millennials, and it's killing me. And so I'm going to read you a quick quote from a recent press release that I got and let you comment on it. Does that sound good?
Oh, okay. Let's do it.
So here's the quote. In less than 5 years, millennials will comprise 50% of the workforce. The next generation of leaders will shape the world of work for years to come, which will be critical for the future of any business. However, in today's culture, accountability is a dying trait. It seems to have skipped a generation. According to award-winning speaker blah, 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 it's time to reverse the millennial effect.
Ben, did you make this up for this podcast? Nobody published that.
Someone sent this out to an entire email list of influencers and bloggers and people they wanted to take that bait and run with it and share that around. And I'm not going to give them the credit for who it is, because that offends me to no end. I'm having a hard time continuing the conversation. It's like making my stomach hurt.
Oh, wow. So that, I think it's interesting that it ends on, let's reverse the millennial effect. Can I tell you, I don't like that.
So,
I don't like that.
So another stat that came out recently, I can't remember if you shared this with me or someone else. I think you put this in our last presentation on the topic, but only 4% of company leaders think they're very good at managing millennials. And so they say, we don't know how to handle these people. Why do you think?
Which is a problem if it's going to be half of your workforce, right?
Yeah, hello. It's the largest population of the workforce today, statistically. Why do you think there's such a fear around millennials, and they're coming to get us, and we're all going to, whatever. Why is there so much fear and concern around this?
Okay, so a couple of things. And we could talk about this all day, so I'm going to be mindful of the fact that this is your podcast and people like to listen to short podcasts. But I think let's talk about the size of our group first, because maybe it is a little bit intimidating that there's so many of us, right? Mm-hmm. From my perspective, I don't think that that's the case, because, everybody's different. But if you look at us like a whole group of one type of people, then yeah, that might be like, whoa, we're doomed, or we're outnumbered, or, they're changing everything and we're not ready for that, or whatever the case may be. But if you look at it like a big chunk of people that are trying to overtake you, then you're going to be fearful, and you're going to be like, oh, we don't know what to do. We don't relate to these people. And you're not going to try to work on it, because you're not individualizing anybody in the group. If
Absolutely.
That makes sense.
I think that's probably a good answer to that, because I've always wondered. I mean, obviously you and I we're in the age bracket that defines us as a millennial. Whoever set that up, the random person, thank you very much. I appreciate that for making sure that I have a label for the rest of my life as a millennial.
Hey, but Gen Z's on our heels, so maybe we don't have to do this for much longer.
Well, it's funny, because I republished a piece last week that I had written last year. Because, again, this was kind of like hot. Now, when I reached out to you to schedule this conversation, I was hot under the collar. I was very upset, because I'd seen so many of these things. And I had posted this thing saying, here's how to deal with all the generations. It was really a sarcastic piece because I was annoyed when I wrote it. And it was basically like, boomers, let's just wait until they all, you know, retire or pass away, and then we can do whatever we want to do. We don't have to listen to them very much longer. Gen X, they're just biding their time till all the boomers are gone, and they can be control. You know, millennials, they're going to wreck everything no matter what you do. Just forget about it. And then Gen Z was like, ah, forget it. Let's just close down and go home. We're all doomed. So, but that seems to be the way that everybody does it. They just kind of bucket everybody in these different things. Hey, if you're a boomer, you're not as good with technology, and you are going to be resistant to change. And I don't know. I'm just like you. I mean, I've met a lot of people who are not like that, who don't fit that stereotype in that group. And so I have to believe it's the same through all of them. We can't just lump us all together and say, okay, we're all completely the same, because you and I, even though we're friends, even though we do a lot of the same kinds of things, we're also at the same time wildly different in ways.
Very different. Very, very different.
You didn't have to say that like you were thankful for that.
Hey, I appreciate you, Ben. I think, you know, for me, first of all, let's acknowledge that we're the older millennials. We're on the older end of that little bracket, for whatever that means to listeners. But me personally, my grandparents had a huge influence in my life. So I got some of that boomer perspective from that. My parents are Gen Xers. So they were obviously a huge influence in my life. My brother and sister are Gen Z, technically. There's such a huge gap in between us. So I feel like, you know, I've been exposed to just even that small group of people in my inner circle who influenced what I grew up to be. And it had nothing really to do with their generation. It was just who they were. And I kind of took all the best pieces of them, you know, I like to think. So my dad is more technologically savvy than I am. And he probably always will be. But, you know, he's an old man now. So it's not fair to look at it like that. And when people, you know, write these posts and, you know, and it's still relevant because people think it's relevant. You know, you and I can say whatever we want. You can say, you know, we understand it differently or we have a different take on it. But as long as people are still trying to wrap their heads around it, it's still going to be relevant.
Yes.
And people are going to monopolize that, and they're going to say things. They're going to write these posts that make you have some sort of reaction like you did, you know, and make you feel like you need something to understand a population of people. But that's not true. There's so many factors that influence the way we do work. It's not just the generation under the roof. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was going to say that reminds me, again, I can't remember if this was in one of the presentations we did or not, but one of my favorite HR web comics a couple of years ago was called One FTE, One Full-Time Employee. And the comic has a man standing there in front of his boss's desk and said, hey, I finally got together this generational needs analysis so I could understand what my team needs. And I put them all into these different buckets of what generations they're in, and I finally understand exactly what they need from me as a leader. And the boss said, there are six of them. Why don't you just ask? Why don't you just talk to them? But it's so easy for people to say, okay, if I can just define you in some way that makes it easier for me, then I can start to decide what to do. Whereas completely on the other end of the spectrum in terms of leading and managing comes from, hey, I understand that you, Christina, you are motivated this way. The things that you care about are X, Y, and Z. And so the way that I need to drive your performance and to really help you be most productive is to address those things for you. Whereas for Karen or for Bob or for Joe, it's different things. And I don't want to say that all managers are lazy, because there are plenty of managers that do this well, but I think it's much easier to take that lazy route of saying, you know what, hey, that's a boomer. So boomers generally need this, and I'm going to hand them that thing instead of looking at people as individuals. It's weird, because the way that you and I, we make light of this by saying, we make light of this by saying when we're presenting, we say, hey, you know what? What if we came into your office and said, you know what? Your Asian females are really entitled and lazy. Here's how you should deal with them. Here are four ways to manage your Asian females. Or your African American males, they are why. They're this thing. And we've just got to, here's how you deal with that. Here's how you work with that. Any HR person would completely lose their stuff.
They would pass out. You can't do that. I mean, it's just interesting to me because most people would agree that they don't want to be generalized like that. So, you know, whether it's an HR professional or a hiring manager, if you were talking to them kind of one-on-one, they wouldn't want you to put them in a bucket, right? But then they'll be so quick to turn around and do the same thing, but not acknowledge that they're doing the same thing because it's common terminology for us.
Is it safe? Is it common? I mean, is it common because it's safe to do that for a population of people that are lower in terms of the hierarchy of the organization? Millennials in general are just getting into the workforce or they're just getting into roles. And so it's safe for us to do that because they're not able to fight back.
Well, okay. So one, it shouldn't be safe, right? I think we can agree that it shouldn't be safe. But two, I think it's so common because people don't associate it with like that example that you just used, because we would never go into any organization or our own organizations and group people together like that and say, like you said, we're going to treat all of our Asian females this way because we know this about them, or all of our African American males this way because we know that about them, or, you know, whatever the group may be, we would never do that. But until you draw that connection, like, hey, you know, ageism is a real thing. I can't sit here and discriminate against, you know, people over a certain age when I'm hiring, right? Mm-hmm. So why haven't we made that correlation yet? Because there's not enough people saying, hey, this is ridiculous. You're labeling people. You're making this harder for them. You're assuming things. And back to the point of the comic, you're just not talking to people. Because if you were talking to people, you wouldn't be talking like this anymore. Let me get off my soapbox.
Take a breather. I'm the one that's supposed to be angry and upset. You're supposed to be the calming voice in this conversation. Now let's go through and talk about the four myths that we break out, because I think that that's a good way to help some of the people that are listening to realize maybe you've said some of these things. Maybe you have thought some of these things. Maybe you've heard this in your organization, and it might be a flag for you from now on to say, hey, wait a minute. Maybe we shouldn't just assume that about these millennials. Is that fair?
Let's do it.
All right. So the first one, but they need constant praise and feedback. I mean, they've got to know, they've got to get the trophy. They've got to be, you know, acknowledged for all their work that they're doing. And they've got to have that feedback. What would you say to that?
Is that a problem? I mean, is that really a problem? If listeners could see my face. So here's the deal. And here's what I think that you need to take into consideration when you think about this generalization, is that things happen faster than they did 20 years ago, right? So I could easily be given a project at work and start just flying through what I think I'm supposed to do. I could work on it for as long as you'll leave me alone to work on it and get to a point. And then when you ask for an update as my boss, to find out that I'm headed in the wrong direction, that I just wasted 2 weeks heading in the wrong direction. I didn't understand something, or I, you know, I just am not doing what you want me to do. If we would have had that constant touch, maybe, you know, however often that needs to be, I could have redirected earlier in my work. So it's not necessarily that I need that constant acknowledgement or praise, but I need that assurance that I'm spending my time wisely and that I'm getting what we need done.
Yeah, absolutely. And how many, again, you and I work with people of all ages, of all life stages, and how many times do you run across employees that are completely and totally on the other end of that spectrum saying, I don't need any praise or feedback anymore. Don't tell me when I do a good job. Please, please don't talk to me anymore. Please don't share, you know, any sort of feedback whatsoever with me. That never happens. I've never seen any study. I've never had a conversation with anybody. Every single thing you see says employees want more communication from their leaders.
I mean, that's the world that we're in right now, right? As far as HR goes, we're all focusing on how can we do performance management and employee engagement better? Like, we hear that every single day right now. And that's where it comes from. Like, you can't manage that or have engaged employees if you're never going to talk to them, if you're never going to acknowledge them, if you're never going to give them feedback.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Number two, they are entitled. They think they should get something for nothing. Everybody gets a trophy.
OK, Okay. I love this one because, and maybe it's because we're on the older end of this bracket, but I did not get participation trophies. And let me tell you, I'm not a good athlete. So when I sucked it up on a ball team, I didn't get acknowledged with a trophy. But all that to say, who gave us the dadgum trophy? Somebody gave us a trophy.
Yes.
I didn't ask for a trophy. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to be upset because we get participation trophies, that's some self-reflection, you know, Gen X and baby boomers. But but that's all I want to say about that. But I don't think that someone's necessarily entitled because, you know, they get an award.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, that entitlement conversation could go 100 different ways. But I don't, you know what? So when I first started my HR recruiting career, I was the youngest person in the office. And gosh, I think everyone else was probably borderline of Gen X and baby boomers, if I'd have to guess off the top of my head. But you know, sometimes when you're younger, people seem to be older than they are. But anyway, and so I worked in this office and they were still like taking paper applications. They were, you know, we had 50 customer sites and they were delivering paychecks weekly. And I'm just sitting here and I'm like, what are we doing? Like, do you guys know we can do this? Like we literally had the software to take online applications. They just didn't take the time to learn how to use it. And so I was like, oh, this is cool. I can work on this and then I can show them how much time we can save. And time is money, right? So I can show them how much money we can save. And also we can encourage people to do direct deposit. So we don't have to deliver those checks. We can just, you know, have them access their pay stubs every week online through this software that we already have. Okay. So I spend, you know, no time, like maybe an afternoon on figuring all of this out. And I go upstairs to the people who run the office and I'm like, y'all, listen, if we do XYZ, we're going to save this amount of time, this amount of money, and our lives are going to be so much easier and we'll be able to focus on A, B, and C over here. They totally interpreted that as me being an entitled brat and me wanting them to do work my way.
Hmm.
When I didn't see it as my way, I thought it as an improvement for all of us. And looking back at my 20-year-old self, I could have definitely presented it differently. But
there.
Yeah, you know, I try to forget some of the things I did when I was 20 because I was kind of rude sometimes. But I know I could have presented it a little bit differently. But even then, like, I never, ever dreamed that that's how they were going to take it. And so I had to lick my wounds for a little bit before we got to a place where we could talk about how that experience played out and that, no, that was not my intention. And that, no, that wasn't going to result in necessarily someone losing a job or us cutting down staff. It meant we could do more of other things. And so, you know, I think that's another area where communication comes in because, you know, maybe you think they feel entitled, but maybe that's not what they're feeling at all. And you guys are just misunderstanding each other.
Absolutely. I love that story. I've never heard that story from you ever. So,
even
I'm learning
so
something new
stories.
About you. We've been friends for years. Awesome. So number three, they're always connected. They can't survive without their technology. They've always got a phone in their hand.
Well, Ben, if it wasn't for technology, we could not record this podcast in two different cities. So, you know, in a lot of ways, technology has made my life a lot easier. And not just mine, but all generations, right? Where I work now, we all have the option to work from home when we need to. That's because of technology. I might have my phone in my hand. I might be connected, but I don't think that that is, I don't think that's a generation thing. I think that's a times are changing. Everyone's got a device. I mean, you look at school districts now are putting device in every student's hand in the classroom.
Yeah.
Because that's how we get work done.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I might have my phone in a meeting, but I could be Googling something we're talking about to confirm a piece of legislation. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not necessarily, just because you see a phone in my hand doesn't mean I'm on Facebook. And I think that's where the problem comes in. People, oh, They're on Facebook. They're on Snapchat. They're not paying attention to work. Da, da, da. Well, no, I'm using it to make my work easier.
I'm more productive. I'm getting more things done because I have this. Right. That's your approach to it. There's two things that I would say. There's one. The first one is they actually did there was a research study that said, you know, hey, for those in the millennial age group, how would you best like to learn? And that group said, I want to attend a conference, not I want to, you know, sit back and watch a webinar or do something else. And technology wise, it's, I want to go and physically be somewhere with people because that's how I think I'm going to learn the most. I thought that was kind of funny to see that. And the other part is, I've heard so many stories from people that said, hey, my boss put me in this role because I'm a millennial and they thought that I'd be good with technology. And they sat me down in front of this new HRIS technology and said, hey, I want you to create a dashboard. And they had no idea what they were doing. And it's not the same thing, you know, using a piece of technology at work or something like that as it is being able to open an app on your phone and take a picture or whatever else, you know, texting with people. Like, that's one thing, being connected there. But to automatically assume that someone understands the advanced way that work is done, and it just blew me away to hear some of those things that people assume because, hey, you know what? You're millennial. You're good with technology. You'll just understand. You'll figure it out. And in reality, it's not always that linear. It's not super intuitive, maybe. Maybe that's what I'm looking for. So anyway, that's one of the things. Don't assume that someone, because they are of a certain age or of a certain demographic, are automatically good with the things you're going to offer them. I actually sent you that article, that NPR article last week that said, look out for positive stereotypes. And it was written by someone that was an Asian male. And he said he went through school hating his life because every time a math test would come up, he would do poorly. And everyone around him's like, oh, we know you aced that because you're the Asian, you're the, you know, genius in the group. And he said he had never thought about how that made him feel and everything else until later, but we put the same conversation. We put unrealistic expectations on a certain group, even if they're positive, and if they fail to meet those, then they feel like they are substandard or like they have missed something or like they're not as good as they need to be. In this example here, we assume you're good with technology. We're going to put you in front of things that you're pretty much guaranteed to fail at. And then you feel like you have screwed something up when in reality, the company had some unrealistic expectations.
I mean, and I think a lot of our problems in general come down to expectations that weren't communicated because you know, in your example, you're like, oh, well, they already know technology. And so on the other end, I'm like, okay, I'm doing this technology project and I'm trying and I don't really know what I'm doing. All the while this person's up here and you're down here thinking, okay, if I do two things right this week, I'm going to be doing great. But you never talked about those expectations. You just assumed. So, you know, everybody loses there, I think. Everybody.
All right. And then the last one, number four in our list of myths about millennials. They aren't loyal. They're always looking for the next opportunity.
Is this my favorite one? I think this is my favorite one. Okay, so I'm going to say I was with my first big girl employer for 7 years. And
is that a technical term, big girl employer?
I think so. I think it's actually like maybe in the dictionary too. I'm not sure. Like Webster, not Urban. And so, you know, I was there for 7 years and there was a time where I thought I might be here for the rest of my career. Wouldn't that be great? And then if you would have asked me that again towards the end of it, I would have punched you in the face because I was outgrowing that culture. We were in the middle of a breakup and we didn't know we were breaking up. Okay. But I think that we underplay some other factors when it comes to always looking for the next opportunity. And one of them I'm going to kick at you that I don't know if I've done before is healthcare changed a lot. Because remember, there was a time where even if you had insurance and you through your job and you decided to leave your job and go to another job, there was still a chance that you wouldn't get accepted into the new plan because of a pre-existing condition if you had any lapse in coverage. And I think that we don't value how much that has made changing jobs easier. Yeah. As a small example.
Yeah.
But I think also, you know, if I go to your organization and I do a great job there, but then there's nothing else for me to learn, there's nothing else for me to do, and I still have that desire, then you should want me to leave because I'm going to get to a point where I'm not happy there. But that's not a bad thing.
That's not a bad thing.
You don't lose when your talent leaves and goes on to be a rock star somewhere else. That's good. That's a good reflection of you as well, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think so.
There's a book that I read a couple years ago, and the author called that dehiring, where leaders would realize that point where you have outgrown the role that you're in and there's no further opportunity for you, and so they kind of work with you to find the next opportunity, even if it's outside the company. And he's like, you're not really firing them, and you don't want them to just see it as resigning because they're leaving. So he called it dehiring, just to kind of illustrate the idea that we hired you because it's a good decision. We're going to dehire you because that's a good decision for both of us as well. And it allows you to go on and be successful elsewhere. And I love that one. They're always looking for the next opportunity. So I actually went back and did some research. You know me and my numbers. I'm a little nerdy. So the median tenure in the U.S., median job tenure in the U.S. in 2014 was 4.2 years, something like that. So across the entire workforce. So I went back and looked at 1983. It's as far back as I could find data. The median worker tenure was 4.4 years. So the average, or median, if I want to be specific, has changed virtually none in that time. Less than, you know, we'd like to think that, oh, you know, things are moving so much faster in terms of people are just moving around a lot more. And we like to, in our mind, paint that picture of someone worked at a job for 30 years. And people have always done that, apparently. And people still are doing that. You and I know people that have been in jobs for a long time, but it's not that radical change people think.
But it wasn't mainstream 30 years ago, right? Because you got to look at like the culture of even what you would find on TV. It was the dad who worked at the factory for 30 years or the bank for 30 years. And it wasn't played out right in front of us before we had access to this kind of data and such. And then, and where that comes from, I think too, is like, so, you know, I worked at an engineering firm previously. And it was a great place to work, and they had a lot of great perks there. And so some of the people who were kind of part of maybe not the ground floor, maybe the first floor of the company growing had spent, you know, 30 years there. So when they're interviewing candidates who are from a different generation than them and they've already had a job, or maybe they've had two jobs, they're like, oh, what is this? They clearly.
Yeah. No sticking power.
And so that's when it becomes a topic of conversation, because they're like, in my day, you know, and well, no, that's not true. Look around at your peers or your friends. Not everyone stayed here for 30 years. And some of them have gone on to other companies or started their own businesses or whatever it is. But it's easy to pick at when it's right in front of your face all the time, when we're so connected. And it's so much more prevalent that that's happening. You see it. You talk about it. People update their LinkedIns, you know, every couple of years because they've got a new job or whatever. And so that data is like right there in front of their faces. But I also think that there's a whole group of us who saw, you know, maybe their dad or their grandfather did work at the factory for 30 years. And then right before retirement, the factory went under and they got let go, and then they lost their pension or whatever, their retirement, or, you know, they were so close but didn't quite qualify, and then they had to start over, and it was hard for them to get a job. And, you know, even sitting from a recruiter perspective, I have to nudge hiring managers all the time, because they have the stigma of people who, and this is what I think is really, really interesting, because this has just been my experience. I have no nerdy math to back this up. But, you know, when I was in a third party recruiting role, and I would interview every single day, there was not a day that I was not doing interviews. And I would interview these people who were being laid off because a company was selling, or a company was going under, or they worked for a union plant and they were on strike, so they were trying to get away from union work, and they would have this long tenure with one place. So nobody else would hire them, because everyone assumed they worked their way up so far in the pay scale and that they only learned a small subset of skills. Mm-hmm. So they weren't getting hired, yet on the other side of it, people are acting like that's what they want. They want someone who's going to spend a long time with a company. But their actions show different.
Very interesting example. So I want to wrap this up slowly, not quickly, because I think you have some good... We talked a lot about the things that are broken, the things that are wrong, the things not to do. You know, please don't do these things we talked about ever again. You now have been certified by Ben and Christina as someone that actually understands what the heck's going on, and you're not allowed to say millennials with any sort of general stereotype ever again. How about we just forget the word, period? Let's talk about, for a second, what early career professionals might actually need, those practical things they do need, because I think that if we want to talk about someone that is early in their career, yes, there are things they need, and this is actually the substitute for all those other things that are very broadly generalizing millennials and yada yada. So let's talk about some of those things they do need. One of the things I like to hear from you, you talked about one of your recent employers a minute ago, structured access to key people and executives. Will you talk about that part of it and how important that is for someone that's getting in and trying to start and launch that career?
Okay, so here's what's cool. At that place, I had the opportunity to start a young professional group because we saw a gap and we wanted to fill it. And that gap was people needed mentors, but they didn't know how to get mentors. And then people were willing to mentor, but they didn't know who needed to be mentored, right? So, you know, I'm just over here on the sidelines like, oh, great, I have a problem to solve. Let's solve it. And working with other young professionals in the facility and trying to bring us together as a group and kind of talk about, hey, what are some things that we can offer you? That was one of the things that came up most often. They were like, you know, hey, we realize we're not a division manager, but we still want to make sure that we have access to those key people who can help shape, you know, what my career path might look like or tell me things that I need to know that I didn't learn in the classroom. Opportunities to break those stereotypes even so that they could be a really good engineer and not just a millennial. Mm-hmm. And so that was really fun to hear and then to kind of connect. And then if you make the right, I mean, people, some of the really experienced people that I worked with were excited to pour in to the younger generation. So that's a huge component. Like if you don't have that group that's excited to pour into the younger generation, and some of them even acknowledge that, hey, I might learn something from them because, you know, they're recently out of the classroom. Things change. They may have learned a new method, you know, to do this. But when you're starting your career, you can't figure out what it's going to look like by yourself. You need an expert in that field who can help you and can answer your questions or correct you when you start going off the rails and, you know, throwing things in people's faces that you think are going to make their jobs better and it just offends them. So, you know, that was really cool. And I think that didn't just apply to millennials. I think that's something that we as a group of professionals can also do for the next generation coming up is just kind of, you know, be there and be open to letting them have access to us and the people above us to help catch that stuff up front.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that story and I love you sharing because I have a one-off story I'm going to share really quick, but that was more broadly, you had buy-in to the highest levels of leadership in the company that said, this is
all the way
to
up to the CEO.
This is important. And we're going to invest time, effort, resources into this because we think that it really matters to make those relationships work. The story that I was going to share is we actually had an employee that emailed me one day out of the blue. He wanted to retire, and I was taken aback because he had never given any indication or anything else. I thought he was happy in his work, and I called him up and said, hey, what's going on? And he turns out he was really happy with his work, but he just wanted to spend some more time with his grandkids and spend some more time fishing and whatever they do in Kentucky. He wanted to do some of that. And so I said, let me call you back in an hour. Give me a minute. And I went and talked to my boss, the CEO, and said, hey, what can we do to work this out? Because we like him. The customer loves him. We don't want to lose him. And his job would be really hard to fill. And so what I came back to him with was, how would you like to work 2 days a week full time? And, you know, that'd be your schedule. And he was completely overjoyed, thrilled, excited about that, to have that control over his schedule, because he didn't even ask for it, because he didn't think it'd be possible. But that gave us the chance to hire in someone else part-time that slowly over time, you know, over the course of a year, became full-time, backfilling him, taking on more and more of his work, because that part-time arrangement wasn't going to work forever. Eventually he would decide that it wasn't worth the marginal effort, the additional effort to go into work those 2 days a week. It wasn't going to give him any more, you know, satisfaction or money or whatever that was giving him. And so we tried to plan strategically to fill that in. And that person that came in was just out of school, was interested in the general field, but didn't know what he wanted to do. And so that gave him a chance to learn from someone who had been doing this for 30 years. He built his connections with the customer. He kind of passed those over to him and, you know, bequeathed them, whatever else you want to call it. And so that's my success story for how that worked. I did it with one person. You did it with a lot, you know, through the effort you did. But it just, when I think about passing the torch or whatever other metaphor we want to use, I think there's so much opportunity to do that as long as that stereotype isn't there. As long as that person isn't sitting there thinking that person's old and stuck in their ways and they're just here because they need the money because they didn't save their retirement. Versus they're looking across the desk thinking that punk just got out of school. They think they know everything. They don't know anything.
They got to earn it. They got to, you know,
all those things.
And I think from, you know, my personal experience and my perspective, I think that it's really hard to approach someone that you know is really good in the business if that's how they're speaking of your generation. I think that most people know, even, you know, you get your arrogant people every now and then, but I think most people know that they can't do everything alone and that they need some guidance. And one of the things that I learned through connecting those YPs to the people that they wanted to be connected to is that they loved hearing the progression of their careers and how things used to be done and how far we've come. And getting to hear those stories about, hey, when we would do this, this didn't work, and this is why it didn't work. And it was good to know those things early on in your career so that you could be more of an asset when you chose what you were going to spend your time on. But I think, you know, I may come in and I may know that I need a mentor, but if everyone's like, oh, I can't stand millennials, millennials are so entitled, I'm not going to feel comfortable. And it has nothing to do with my feelings. I just feel like you're not going to think it's worth the time if that's how you view my generation. So I'm not going to waste your time or my time. So it has nothing to do with, you know, being tenderhearted or well, and you know me, I'm not tenderhearted, and you know, you can be rude to me and I'm going to just be rude right back to you. But people underestimate how the vibes that you give off influence the people who may look up to you.
That is a quotable quote right there. And make sure and I mean,
tweet it right now. Stop what you're doing and tweet it.
Yeah, stop recording the podcast, cancel it all out, and just tweet that one out. I made a note on the timestamp. I'm gonna have to capture that one because that was a really good one. A good one, I think, to close us out and finish up. Unless you have some other like masterful one you're hanging on to as a like a 1-2 punch delivery.
No, when you build it up like that, I gotta bow out.
All right. Everybody else, you know what? If you've enjoyed this, obviously Christine and I love the topic in terms of educating you, not in terms of just, anyway, we do a fun and funny session covering these topics more broadly. We've done them at some Sherm events. We've done some workshops, things like that. If you love the topic and you want someone to come and share the real insights on millennials, we'd love to chat with you about that. You can, my contact info and Christina's will be in the show notes for this one. Christina, for those people that aren't already connected to you, shame on them. Let them know how they can reach out and connect with you best.
Hey, so I'm on Twitter a lot and it's at @HRecruit. So it's supposed to kind of look like HR recruit. It's just one H, one R. Okay. Don't do HR recruit, H recruit. Okay. And then LinkedIn, Christina Minyard. You should be able to find me pretty easily on there. I do want to throw in on what you just said, though, Ben, that we would go to an organization and educate your hiring managers, too. We don't just talk to Sherm chapters. We're we're totally game for saying the things to your hiring managers that you can't say to them.
Yeah, absolutely. The things that you can't or won't say to them, we would be glad to do that on your behalf. Awesome.
I would be thrilled.
Well, thank you so much, Christina. It's always fun sharing, chatting with you, connecting, interacting. You have a lot of insights to share, and I appreciate you joining us today.
Well, thanks. I enjoyed it, and I hope all the listeners did too.
Awesome. To the rest of you, thank you for joining us on We're Only Human. I'm Ben Eubanks, your host, and I will catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to We're Only Human. Please take a moment to share this episode with another HR leader who might see it as a valuable resource in their daily work. For more information about the podcast and to see all our show archives, please visit upstarthr.com.